Welcome to the Art of Slowing Down to Quantum Leap podcast that I created especially for conscious introvert entrepreneurs. And if you desire to grow and quantum scale without the hustle and are ready to discover the missing pieces to effortlessly running a soul-aligned business, then this is for you. And I'm your host, Annalena Fuchs, a human design and energetic alignment coach. And my mission with this podcast is to provide you with a shortcut to your most aligned path to success and financial freedom using a powerful combination of human design, science, and spirituality. And I myself have shifted from working 9 to 5 to now enjoying the freedom of creating things on my own terms. And I want to help you do the same. Welcome everyone to another episode of the Art of Slowing Down podcast. It's your host here, Annalena, and today I have again a beautiful guest with me. Her name is Kelly Carpenter, and I'm going to introduce her briefly, and then we're going to have a beautiful conversation. So Kelly is no stranger to mind, body, and spiritual awareness. She first started practicing transcendent meditation already at the age of 6. That is very impressive to me. And Kelly is also a published author. She professionally studied with Gabor Maté and is the founder of both The Other Side of Average, Therapy for the Soul, and the TOSA Method. And Kelly is now a Chopra Center Certified Transcendent Meditation Instructor, a Conscious Relationship, Uncoupling, and Parenting Coach, and Conscious Connected Breathwork Facilitator, Mentor, and Trainer. And here she is. Welcome, Kelly, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on here.
Yeah, my pleasure. So the core of your work is all around trauma. Is that correct?
It's actually, you know, around, it was where the intersection of trauma and consciousness meet.
Yeah.
You know, with the meditation background that I have and growing up with, more about present moment awareness and, you know, spirituality, and then the understanding of trauma, you know, that that came. And, you know, in the core of our being, we are whole, complete. The answers are really within, you know, what we're truly seeking is that coming home to that depths of truth within. And then from the trauma lens, you know, that's really what's clouding.
Yeah.
You know, or in the way, or, you know, this armor from actually realizing or experiencing or really embodying who we innately are.
Yeah. I would love for you, because the word trauma is something we hear a lot, right? And I think sometimes it's also used and we don't really know what we're talking about in some way, right? And I would just love to hear from you for the listeners in a very simple practical way, how would you define trauma?
Yeah. You know, often I use Gabor Maté's quote is trauma isn't what happens to you. It's what happens inside of you as a result of what happens to you, or maybe didn't happen to you. And, you know, there's big T trauma, there's little T trauma, and it's in its most rudimentary definition. It's an event that happened that defined us in some way, that we weren't supported, we weren't held in order to receive from it instead of being, you know, trapped by it. So it's that, as he says in his quote, it's that restriction and that constriction that happens on the inside. And sometimes, you know, for children, you know, that can actually be quite small. We've, you know, an event that happened that we attach meaning to, and all of a sudden it defines who we are for the rest of our life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's those moments where we spill the milk, we get yelled at, and then we create the story that we are stupid, or we're not loved, or we don't belong, and all these things. Yeah. And I find sometimes also now as an adult, right, being more aware of it, that the same situation for some one person can be absolutely no big deal at all. It's just like, yeah, whatever. And another person, it just hurts so badly and take it super personal because somehow it triggers, I guess, something from the past, if we're aware of it or not, right? And
Yeah.
it can create, it's clouded through what's happening in the inside, I guess, how we see the world, right? It's the
Yes.
trauma is the lens we see through, I guess, in some
Yeah,
way.
absolutely. 100%. I totally agree. Yeah.
So since there's a gazillion of energy healing modalities out there, there's therapy, there's psychology, obviously, there is coaching, trauma-informed coaching. I mean, I think we have a variety of things out there, which I think is beautiful because I think there's not just one way how to deal with that, right? It
Absolutely.
depends what resonates with a person, like what has worked for you and how do you approach releasing, letting go of trauma and actually changing it. I mean, using it as fuel, I guess, to become who you really are, or access what's within you. Like, how does that work? How can we break free from those, I guess, victim cycle patterns in some way, right? Where we get stuck in the trauma.
And it's actually, what you said is completely what I stand for. Is that we really truly can end the cycle and evolve beyond our story, whatever story that is defining us. And I believe in not one way, as you mentioned. There's multiple ways. And so even within, the TOSA method, as you mentioned in the bio, it's, in there, and that is really what I call, five-layer approach to ending the cycle of, conscious healing, of really stepping into this evolutionary journey that we are to know ourselves. And in there, I talk about, one of the steps is conscious practice. And it's not just one. If we can't separate the mind, body, soul connection. And if we're working from that holistic approach, as we're working with the mind, we're working with the body, we're working, on a different level, on that spiritual level. So I kind of talk about it as it's the therapeutic approach, the embodied approach, and the karmic approach. And we really need all, in the world where I'm a breathwork facilitator and trainer. So I train trainers or train facilitators, and what I see in the world is breathwork isn't, isn't the be all and end all. It's even though it's a buzzword, and
Yeah, I was gonna
everyone's on
say
the
it's,
bandwagon of breath work.
yeah.
But actually, when if people have a lot of stored stuff in the body, and they go into breath work and they're held, breath work is an activating process, and if they're not held in the right container in the right way, it's a very powerful tool, and a lot can come up for people, and then they feel dysregulated, unsure what to do with it. So just that one way of, or one aspect of working in the embodied approach, the somatic, like we're going to get in there and we're going to, dig some things up. But if we don't have a different level of container of accessing a stillness within, which is more in that karmic, stillness, present moment awareness, which is more I use, meditation as a meditation teacher, then it's really difficult to hold that. And the therapeutic, or working with the mind, and our understanding that unless we are held in that container, we might not be able to understand or to hold what comes up, let's say, in breath work. Or people can go through the therapeutic approach, talk therapy for 20 years, but if it's still held in the body, they're going to be still stuck in that cycle. So I really do believe in that holistic approach of using, that therapeutic approach, the embodied approach, and the karmic approach.
So what I hear from what you're saying, because I also have some of my own experiences as a highly sensitive person, also with breath work and tons of different healing modalities, is we need to have patience, right? Because I think sometimes with this breath work, it can be done very extreme. And I have had a couple of those experiences myself where it felt overwhelming in a way that it almost, yeah, dysregulated my nervous system because it was such a huge shift that it no longer felt safe. And
Yes.
I have found whatever healing modality it is that I'm using, the slow pace usually works best, where I have patience, where I can, it's almost like I like to massage it into my new nervous system one little step at a time. It's just like when I start to run for a marathon, right? I'm starting slow with just 5 minutes a day. And eventually, like, I'm not going to go out there and run 2.5 hours and break a leg, right? Because, and then we are like, okay, this was crazy. I'm not ever going to do anything. And my question is basically, have you seen where, you know, we do those things like breath work in a bit extreme way without really knowing if it's actually right for us, but we're following the hype, can it actually throw us back instead of
100%?
Yeah,
I believe so. You know, it's no different. You know, what you said is, you know, it didn't feel safe in, you know, what was coming up. It just was a little bit over the edge. And the one thing that is for certain is that healing doesn't happen unless we feel safe.
Yeah, exactly, right?
And, you know, that could be being held in a, you know, really safe way to meet what is coming, but it also doesn't feel safe if you're, you know, in a therapeutic session and someone is psychoanalyzing you enough just to cause more damage.
Yeah.
Right. So there's a whole other level. Like, we've got these modalities or these approaches, but what is really a safe container? Right. I always say, no matter where we are on our journey, the one thing that we all have in common is that we want to be seen, held, and loved exactly as we are.
Yeah.
You know, like, can we meet what is and hold it in a way where we can help the individual access the wisdom that is in the body, the wisdom that actually is in the center of pain? You know, we're so, yeah, as humans, we want, well, first of all, we're hardwired to heal.
Yeah.
We're hardwired to process emotions, and we actually desire to make new meaning of our pain. And that's not in labeling or, you know, digging up a whole bunch of stuff. There's a whole other level of what it actually means to be held in a safe container, so that healing and that deep knowledge from within can be accessed by the individual, not told, you know. It's like, you know, again, I've worked in this world for so long, you know, where it's like a facilitator in breathwork looking for a big, you know, experience, and it's, you know, their own agenda, or with therapists or unhealed healers that, you know, are so quick to tell you what is going on for you instead of supporting you to access the wisdom that's actually in you.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big point, right? Because I have actually, on my own journey in the self-development world, also working with coaches and everything, I find that I'm the most successful the less I get coaching, the less I get the healing and stuff. Like, I still do it, right? But really from the right people, where there is exactly this approach, let me have her come to her own realization instead of,
yes,
you need to do this, I'm seeing this block here, because it kind of creates this like superiority or inferior kind of thing, where I'm this little human being here and there's this healer that, you know, knows everything and sees everything. So I think that is actually causing more damage. And
I believe so too.
Yeah, I've also found when I work with clients, actually has made my life so much easier. I'm here to guide. I'm here to facilitate. I'm here to open up the space. But my clients have the most profound transformation when they have their own realizations. It's when I give less advice, when I just, I'm being there, right? And I listen. I mean, listening is, for a reason, one of the most powerful coaching tools that we actually have. Because, you know, if you are, somebody's telling me like, oh, this is what needs to be fixed, yeah, okay, I may go in here and out there. But if I'm in a session and I have this, oh my God, moment, it's like, oh wow, now I get it, where this is coming from. That I will not forget, most likely, right? And it's really going to create a profound change for myself. You know, one thing or question in my mind that came up, which I think you're brilliant person to explore this further. I want to hear your take on it. So there's this thing with comfort zone, right? I think we have just come to the realization, which feels in my body very true, that healing can only happen in a safe place. I also have, from another guest out on my podcast, we had this conversation about, well, healing can only happen when the body relaxes. I think they go together, the relaxation and feeling safe, right? Yeah. Because I think that's what has happened in my case. When I've done breath work, I didn't feel safe and I felt contracted in my body. So how is this going to do anything good? Now, then we have this idea, especially in the self-development space, to grow, you have to get out of your comfort zone. So I get that. And I think the way that I have been talking about it more for myself, how it feels good for me, is like, it's like slightly stretching your comfort zone. But this idea of like, you gotta jump out of your comfort zone. And I think we have to be also careful with that. But I would love to hear, okay, how can we be safe and relaxed, yet still keep expanding our comfort zone so we can actually grow into a new reality?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really key, because we can be outside of our comfort zone and still feel safe. You know, oftentimes in the breathwork world, you know, training facilitators, we talk about the window of tolerance, mm-hmm. right? You know, being in that present moment awareness. And yet we want to, you know, with breathwork, it is an activating process. But again, we want to do that with presence, you know, with the ability to be with what is rising. Because if we're not, it creates that contraction and that restriction, as you experienced in the body, and, you know, healing isn't happening. So we want to bump up against those, what we call, you know, tender edges, or outside of that, you know, just to the edge of that comfort zone, in a way where we're still present to it. You know, that's just using it within the context of, you know, that restriction on the inside. You know, we can talk about outside of our comfort zone in many different, you know, ways. It could be doing public speaking, but maybe we've prepared enough and, you know, it's like outside of our comfort zone, but we have this preparation, we have this ability to meet it. I always talk about that, meeting it. So in breathwork, or, you know, within the therapeutic realm, you know, at, or somatic realms, as we start meeting what is arising, or what is arising is arising, can we meet it? Can we meet it with presence? And that creates a safety. You know, that might not feel comfortable.
Yeah.
To be, you know, to have what is coming up, the depths of emotions that might be arising, maybe some, you know, memories, but are we able to meet it with presence and with the right facilitator and the right, you know, way, we can actually meet that and create a sense of safety. And you mentioned listening, and, you know, from your coaching, your, you know, your support of clients, that, you know, this state of listening, you know, oftentimes I, you know, talk about two things. There's conscious support and unconscious support, and they really are key to our healing. You know, we can't do this alone, and yet it's full, you know, ownership and radical responsibility for our healing. You know, it's a both and type of experience. And when we, you know, let go of the need to know with your clients, right? The need to coach or inform, and you help them access that, you know, comes from within. And, you know, I also heard in that listening, it's also a witnessing. Because when those constrictions happened in our body, they happened in a relational container. So healing also happens in a relational container, but within that same safe context that we were, you know, speaking about earlier. It doesn't feel safe if someone's telling you what they think that they know about you. Right. Or looking to dig up a bunch of, you know, some stuff somatically in the body that doesn't feel safe. So, you know, that trauma can still continue to cycle or even re-traumatize. Or we can be really met and heard and seen. And, even nervous systems regulate off of each other. So even with my facilitators, I say, we can only take people as far as we've gone. So if we have a hard time, being with emotional pain that comes to the surface, or we're looking to just dig things up and always have big processes, that is not necessarily supportive of, the people that we're working with. But if we've had an experience of just really finding safety in what arises and really trusting that Rumi quote that I always say is, the wound is where the light enters us. So if we have experiences of really meeting what arises and having that be an opening and a doorway to what is really wanting to be received and integrated through that, then we have this trust in our own experience and therefore can really support someone else in it.
Yeah, I love that. For some reason, as you have been talking, the jinkies have come up a lot for me in my mind. I don't know. Are you familiar? Have you heard about the jinkies?
No.
So the jinkies is something that has grown out of human design. Mm-hmm. And we have these 64 jinkies. They're archetypal energies. They go back to the Chinese I Ching, the 64 hexagrams. And for me, it's like ancient wisdom that simply explains how the universe works in some way. Mm-hmm. And in the jinkies, we have, so every jinki itself has three levels of consciousness. There's a shadow, there's a gift, and there's a city. The shadow is, I think, what you have been describing, right? That's the wounded part we have. It's mostly some kind of fear we have. And Richard Rudd, who is the creator of the jinkies, he always says that every shadow contains a gift. This is in essence, right? What you're saying as well. It's like, because really when we run away from the shadow through these coping mechanisms we have, because it's so uncomfortable, I'm going to eat candy, I'm going to watch TV, I'm going to keep busy, I'm going to run away from it, right? So I'm not going to feel how I really feel. And in the moment, yeah, that may work well, but over time, as we know, those emotions come just stronger later on at some point, right? Yeah, when we have the courage to actually be with that part of us in a loving way, with a shadow, then, and especially when we don't need it anymore, right? I think it's also this, like, we are always like, I need to fix, because then we're in resistance of the shadow, right? And when we resist persists, and then eventually the gift just arises when we least expect it. And like, yeah, so, and also, I've also often learned, or I think experienced, that before we really are letting go of the trauma, it gets the most intense in some way. Mm-hmm. What is your experience with that? Or what would you share with some people? Because I think sometimes people can get a little bit hopeless. Well, I've done all the work and it's not getting better, or I'm stuck in the trauma cycle. Like, how can people break free from it and really change the story?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say from, what I mentioned earlier, the TOSA method, which is, the five layers, or, the five things that we really need to develop in order to break the cycle. And did you want me to go through those five things?
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, what are those five? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I have a workshop that I'm just going to mention right now, monthly, where I teach on this, mm-hmm. As go in even, deeper depths. But just to give you the short version, the first step is this conscious ownership, that we really need to step into that radical responsibility. That, in some way, somehow, we've done an inner assessment and we really choose to do our healing. Choose, even if we're still stuck in that victim narrative, that wounded story, that we are taking ownership for it, because carrying it on and carrying it forward is causing more damage. And we have some sort of ownership in the fact that we're cycling it forward. Yeah. So it's key.
it means we're stop blaming others. We're like, okay, somehow, I mean, I'm the common denominator in all the stories, right? So why not look at me? And
yeah. And we might not know how, and we still might, you know, be quite in that victim narrative, but we are just really ready, and we're taking full ownership of our healing. And then the next is conscious learning. You know, we might learn some concepts, some understanding, you know, the ancient wisdoms, the gene keys that you mentioned, some things that are going to support us on our journey. So there's a learning process that goes in there. But the deepest level of learning, and we've even alluded it to it in different parts of the conversation, is when we bring the unconscious conscious, right? Is when it comes from within. That's the deepest levels of learning.
Yeah.
And in order to access that conscious learning, is we usually need conscious support. And there's a difference between, as already mentioned, unconscious support and conscious support. You know, it's really key, the someone that can help you access that wisdom from within. And, you know, the three conscious practices that I mentioned, we really believe that we need that holistic approach to our healing. It's not a one size fits all. And there's not even just one, you know, modality. If we're working on our mindset, you know, or we're doing the therapy, how are we working with the embodied approach to access where it is somatically and cellularly in the body? You know, obviously the meditation to bring us into that place of stillness, you know, reconnecting to that wisdom that lives within, that silence is the birthplace of, you know, our creativity and access to that place of pure potentiality. And a level of, you know, conscious surrender, you know, which to me looks like trust. But it really develops and evolves as we continue to work with all of those layers and those levels. Because at first we might just, I don't know, in a breathwork session, we might just start actually trusting the messages that are in the body, or maybe trusting the, you know, or surrendering to the emotions that are arising, because we have this understanding that when we're really present with it, you know, presence is the only true safe container. So what we resist persists. So if we're actually moving away from those that are arising in breath work, you know, they're going to persist. But when we actually soften into them, but we do need the safe space, the right support in order to do that. But when we soften into them, there's access to that greater wisdom, that knowledge, that gift on the other side. So when we do that, we have an experience of, when I surrender, when I'm with this, you know, something is born from it. So we start building a trust in our body, in what arises, in, you know, even life being, you know, life happening for us, not to us. So there's a deep trust that arises through, you know, those layers, and working with, you know, each of those modalities and approaches and right support that can help you access that on the inside.
Wonderful. And so you mentioned did you mention all five, or was it the first two and then the three layers?
Yeah. So it's conscious ownership, conscious learning, conscious support, conscious practices, and conscious surrender.
Yeah, so surrender is huge. I think surrender is also so misunderstood. Often people think, oh, I'm just going to give up. Like, no.
Yeah.
No. It's about the trust and actually, yeah, being open to magic and surprises and not knowing. Because I think we humans are so like, we want to have certainty and we want to know what the outcome is. But I think surrender is teaching us that, right? Like, be open to receive what you don't know yet. And you don't even know how good it can get, right? And you can just fully lean into the space.
And you know, it points back to what you were saying, as you support people, right? Because you're letting go of the need to know or have all the answers. But, you know, trusting that the answers come from within. And that if you can hold them in the right way, listen to them in the right way, inquire in the right way, the answers come from within them, right? And that's that meeting of, you know, or allowing to not know, to surrender to that depth, trust in their body, in their wisdom. You know, oftentimes I have this diagram that I created, which is, you know, a demonstration of the mind, body, soul. So many people, you know, the concept out there, you know, Google searches and images is that, you know, you're going to access consciousness through this way, you know, through the crown chakra and up into the heavens and the spiritual aspect.
That's
but
true, yeah.
it, we actually access it in an embodied way through the body, right? So it's from the mind into the body into the soul, which is then all encompassing because it doesn't have any beginning or any end.
That's true.
And
yeah, we're always connected to it.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes it's also spoken about as, you know, the brain mind, the heart mind, the gut mind. So on, you know, the level of our thinking, the mind knows what it's learned, what it can see, you know, what's right in front of it. The body feels things, even if we don't know why we feel things. And on a soul level, we just know things. There's a level of clarity and wisdom and knowledge that we have access to when, you know, we are dropping into that degree, that layer. But oftentimes through our, you know, growing of awareness, we start to listen to the body a little. You know, many people are walking out, they're not listening or paying attention to the messages their body's giving them. But as we start listening and we kind of feel like, oh, that feels like, you know, this direction is not the right direction. But what happens is then oftentimes we jump into the mind and make it mean something. Instead of staying with the unknown and just trusting, this doesn't feel like the right direction. And then we drop into a deeper level of awareness that comes with a whole different level of clarity and knowingness and wisdom. Instead of, you know, as we start to trust the body, we start to build this awareness or this felt sense, you know, oftentimes we're still jumping up into the mind and we're attaching a meaning that's based on a lot of past conditioning. And, you know, instead of staying with the unknown, because as you mentioned, you know, this need to know. But when we stay with the unknown, knowingness arises.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I also sometimes have witnessed, I think from myself and also people in my world, right, that there's always this like one breakthrough after another, and people want to have, oh my God, now I know, and now I have the clarity. And I feel sometimes it's rushed, you know, why don't you just be with it for a little bit longer? Because very often we have this breakthrough, and then right after comes the big confusion, you know? So I think it needs to be less, hyped up sometimes, because the true healing is much more grounded, calming. It doesn't have to be, I don't have to share with the world that I have yet another breakthrough and my whole life has changed in this one moment. Because that's also what people, I think, fall for so many times, where we over hype up things. Yeah. Like, oh my God, I did this one thing. I had this breakthrough. I'm going to tell you my secret. And these are the things that I have really stopped to listen to, because in the beginning, I have to be honest, on my journey, I always fell for those things. You know, if it was about making the money in the beginning, then it was about, oh my God, this is the healing modality you have to do, and this is the breakthrough you're going to get, you know, like, yeah, great. Well, my experience is probably going to be very different than yours. And I find that the true successful people, like, it's more of this little bit reserved ground energy where I want to approach, like, I want to know what you know, instead of like you shouting it out from the top of the mountains so people can hear, you know? So, and I love that in your energy, because you're so calming and grounding. And this is actually something that's very funny. That's people that tell me all the time, right? When they come in my presence, they're like, I really feel calm, I feel safe, I feel grounded. And I was like, and you're one of the people where I can even receive that, like even deeper calming and grounding. So I think people that are listening here right now, you feel super triple calm and, relaxed. So.
You know, and it's just the meditation, you know, it's the experience of presence.
Yeah, I can
being.
Tell, like, with you, like, it's embodied.
Yeah.
You know, because there is no rush, there is no convincing or anything. It's like it's grounded in the core of your being.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So,
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And you know, and I have a similar experience to what you were saying as far as the rushed and trying to get somewhere or attaching meaning to some big experience or some big quote or, you know, new book out or, and that was, my mom was such a gift to me on many, many layers and bringing me meditation, not because she was some guru, actually because she was suffering herself when I was six, and she went to learn and, you know, took me along as well to learn TM, Transcendental Meditation. But she was always a seeker, and she was really grasping for that awakening or that enlightenment or that self-realization when then her suffering would end. And, you know, and I see it a lot in the world, in this grasping and this looking for this experience and therefore not meeting the moment. And the moment is where the gift is,
that's so,
you know,
exactly.
And that meeting those tender edges or those challenging emotions or those circumstances that feel sticky, you know, they really are. They really are the divine opportunity that we're looking for. They are, you know, the cave we feel to fear to enter holds the treasures we seek. And there is no magic pill.
Yeah, sorry guys.
quick fix. Or, you know, we can't think positive enough in order to, you know, totally change some of those shadow pieces, as you mentioned. We have to meet them. We have to, you know, see them. We have to bring some tenderness to them. And that's when they alchemize into the gifts that they're really there to give us.
And as you were speaking now, I had this realization for myself, which I think I have had before, but it became clear that I think with a comfort zone, right? I think that's really where we're being asked to get out of our comfort zone, is to meet those shadows, to actually be with a discomfort of feeling yuck, feeling uncomfortable, feeling in a void, in a space of not knowing. And when we can just be with that discomfort, that's when all of a sudden the little golden nuggets arises. And most likely when we no longer need it, right? When we're just okay being in this space. It's so true. It's always the seeking and it's always trying to find something outside of yourself, and then everything brings you back. And then I always like, just get the book, The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle, right? Because he nailed it down a long time ago. And everything really we have out there is about being present. It's about being mindful. And it's not some new thing we still have to figure out. It's just actually doing the thing, right? And actually, it's also, I mean, obviously my podcast is called The Art of Slowing Down for a very big reason, you know? And I also have found the whole thing with mindset work. It has its place, obviously, right? Because it's a muscle we can build. But in the very beginning, before I did the inner work with emotions and everything, it felt hard. It felt so unnatural. My whole body was resisting it and hammering in like positive affirmation for 2 hours. I mean, even if it works for somebody, it's not sustainable for me, because that's, and now what I have found, that when you release something from within, that positive mindset is already there and it just magically comes out. And from that place, now I can make this conscious choice and be aware of, like, oh, wow, I can, and I may still fall into the old habits of being the victim and stuff. And then I can start to choose to change it, but it's a more effortless place, right? When we do it from that inside out approach.
Yes. And I loved what you said. It's the effortless place.
Yeah.
You know, it's just birthed through, you know, and in that present moment awareness that's developed through the practice of, you know, proper meditation or consistent meditation, is that we can just witness those thoughts that aren't serving us and become conscious choice makers.
Yeah,
what we actually do want to think instead of forcing it, as you mentioned, you know, and hammering it in and spending, you know, this time on affirmations, you
yeah,
know, and with me working and providing, you know, support in all of those realms, I've often said, if I was to pick one thing, you know, I talk about three conscious practices because I really feel that they're necessary where we are in our evolutionary journey as humans in general. But if I was to pick one thing, it would be meditation. Because if we are sitting in that place of silence and accessing, you know, that stillness within, that access point to that innate wisdom, you know, all the rest does just fall away. It's just I found, you know, at becoming a transcendent meditation teacher, you know, people would learn the practice, they would understand all the reasons why it's of huge benefit, but they wouldn't practice the practice.
Yeah, well,
because when people sit in stillness, when we slow down, we have to come in contact with all that we've been avoiding.
Then it
the
gets
thoughts
uncomfortable, of course.
Yeah,
Exactly.
The thoughts that they've been thinking and the pain and the body that they've been avoiding. And so hence the need to, you know, that holistic approach. Right. So we can start working with the somatics, with the meeting of that pain and vulnerability that we've spent a lifetime, you know, trying to avoid. We can start unraveling these thoughts and these beliefs that we've been believing for a long time. And then it frees up space for us to, yeah, sit and to be with, or, you know, continue that journey of accessing stillness.
I love that. Even our conversation, right? I feel like there's stillness in it because there are more breaks, there are more pauses. There is not this rushed energy. It's something I have been noticing myself, you know, being a podcaster and also learning about communication. Because stillness can get us very uncomfortable. Oh my God, I need to say something, right? And so... Yeah, and I think that has also a lot. It's like it's kind of one of these facets, right? When it comes to, you know, even in daily life, how we're always avoiding the void, the space, the nothingness, because it gets us so uncomfortable, just like when we have a regular conversation. Oh, wonderful. So I want to ask you, since I shared with you earlier, like, so we talk a lot about human design and these. Also, Gene Keys is part of it, astrology, a little bit on my podcast. Yeah. And I think when we first got in contact, I always ask, you know, because it's a interest of my audience. And you said that, or your assistant, right? That you don't necessarily like you understand these tools, but you have your perspectives on it because we can so easily identify with that. And that actually resonates a lot with me. And my audience will love it as well because we can really misuse any personality kind of test, like even the Enneagram or, yeah, human design, because now you're this type and da 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 da, right? So I would love to hear your take on that. And I mean, what you have been experiencing in your life of how it's not beneficial for us and how can we use it in a healthy way?
Yeah, beautiful. And, you know, I remember that part of the email and, you know, asking my assistant to email back and say, I might not be the right guest for you, you know, if you have a certain approach to, you know, to this. And when you replied back with actually my approaches, and it was more in alignment and this openness to have, you know, a deeper dialogue versus it being all from a hype of human design. And so I was really, in hearing your reply, excited to be here and to have, you know, a realer conversation about that. So thank you for asking.
Nice.
And yeah, I think with anything that labels or that somehow defines us, I'm all about becoming undefined. You know,
I love that term,
about,
becoming undefined.
yeah. And, you know, letting go of our attachments or redefining all of these things that have defined us. And I think that how they can be helpful is that we can feel seen. You know, even people had conversations with people, whether that is, you know, talking about the label of personality disorders, you know, borderline personality, and how, or ADHD, and how seen they felt, how it made a lot of sense. It attached, you know, it brought some meaning to what they were noticing in their behavior or in their way of showing up in the world. And I think that any of the personality tests, you know, have that same impact. We can feel seen. But like any of it, you know, information's only good if we can also surrender it, if we're not attached to it, if we don't define ourselves by it. And yeah, so that's sort of my take. They can, you know, lend great insights. But, you know, when we think of our type, you know, all of our mental, emotional, and behavioral patterns are all in service to some true needs that were unmet from our childhood, typically. And which is essentially those coping strategies that are created, right? How we're showing up in the world. And so when we go deeper into our healing and we're meeting some of those unmet needs and we're really holding ourselves in those places we weren't held and really seeing ourselves in those ways that we weren't, you know, seen, then oftentimes, you know, well, always actually, if we're seen and held in that right way, is that those behavioral patterns, those mental, emotional patterns start falling away. And we show up in totally new ways in the world, more authentically, more aligned, more inner autonomy.
Yeah, I love that because I have been in human designer for many, many years, and it was absolutely life-changing for me. It was this thing for me, right? Like for some people, it's breath work or the meditation that gave me that confirmation that I needed. And it's beautiful. But then I noticed, right, people can get very attached, and there started to be a little bit of this separation. I'm this type and I'm better than this, or yeah. I'm a victim, or I cannot do this because I'm this. And I started like, whoa, hold on, what's happening here? No, because I guess I assume that everybody, I can see things from all these different perspectives very easily. And, you know, I also love math and how, yeah, it can be a number, but it overlaps, right? And it's all interconnected. Yeah. But I realized that's not how everybody sees it. So human design and any kind of personality kind of categorization or whatever you want to call it, when we come from it from a victim place, we can use it to justify all of it, right? And it can be actually very counterproductive. I also feel like it's a way of waking us up in some way, you know? And ultimately, and I've had some actually guests on my podcast where also we just briefly talked about human design. And I told them, like, I feel like you live so in alignment, like you don't need human design in any way or form, right? Because I mean, this is here to confirm something that you know about yourself, but you're not giving yourself really permission of who you are. But right. If you're fully living your essence, I mean, great if you're interested in human design, but it's not like everybody needs that, you know? And I also find that especially in the last year, I have found that I'm kind of transcending my chart or whatever this thing is, right? Like, I feel like I look at it less, I spend less time with it because I feel like it has served its purpose. And now also, funnily enough, in the last 2-3 months, I have discovered a different type of astrology, which is called true sidereal, which according to my understanding is even more accurate because it's what's really in the sky. And now your whole human design chart changes. So you're a different type. Everything is like, you know, and for me, it was like, oh, cool, exciting. It makes sense. But for some people, it's now an identity crisis because we got so attached. And that further broadened my horizon of like, we have to be very like conscious of how we use these kind of tools, right? And yeah, while it's super helpful, I love that, yeah, how you just talked about it, you know, how we have to be very detached from it, you know, use it for what it's good for, to get the confirmation, to feel seen exactly, but not over identify with that and put yourself in a box.
And I find, you know, a similar concept with things like doing inner child work or, you know, past life work, you know, in sessions that I have one-on-one with people, I can go, you know, really support them to go very deep into that wisdom in their body, you know, work with inner child. We can even go into the womb space. We can, you know, work with generations and past lives. But what arises in that is there to be integrated. It's no different than, you know, what we talked about, the gift behind emotions, right? Or the gift on the other side of the shadow. You know, are we accessing the gift and the wisdom in that, or are we attaching to it? So some people have worked with maybe an inner child piece, and it's like, oh, my inner child, you know, wasn't given the space, and it somehow, or their, you know, 14-year-old wasn't, and it somehow is now permission to act out because I'm giving my 14-year-old the space, or, you know, well, in my past life, this happened, and so that's why I am the way I am today. It's and, you know, and being locked into that versus using it in a whole different
way. Because then we stay stuck, right, in the old story, and we use it as an excuse in some way. Yeah, I hear you. I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Thank you for everything, Kelly. This was such a beautiful, wonderful, calming, grounding conversation for myself. And I wanted to always ask my listeners, like, what's the one nugget of wisdom, like the one thing that you feel like is of the greatest benefit that you want to share with them?
You know, I often say is the answers are within. You know, you are who you're searching for, and you just need the right tools and the right support to access that, to remember that, and to, you know, disarmor the barriers to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Thank you. It's been a really lovely conversation. I really appreciate your way of being.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Likewise. And also, how can people find you that would like to get in contact with you? You also mentioned you have bi-weekly retreats, right?
As well. The retreats that I hold are twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
So they're usually in, you know, Mexico, Costa Rica in January, February of the year, and then in the European continent. So Spain is this coming June.
Nice.
So twice a year I have, there's called Awakening Through Trauma Retreat. So it's a very immersive, deeply held, life transforming experience.
Nice. Yeah.
And monthly, for the next several months, I'm going to be holding, Awakening Through Trauma, the workshop.
Wonderful. Yeah. I'm going to make sure I share everything in the show notes also. So your Instagram is The Other Side of Average. I love that because we have to stand out, right? We do not want to be average, like everybody else. I love that so much. So
And it's also because I'm so average, the trauma that I experienced, the conditioning.
Well,
so, but how do we, within these, you know, things that seem to have defined us, how do we become undefined?
Yeah, I see what
you're saying. And that's the other side of average, using them instead of being defined by them.
Yeah, yeah. I was actually, as I was speaking, I was like, well, there's probably another side to the average, how I'm seeing it. So interesting, right? How we can see it from, it's also words, right? Sometimes you say a word and we take things sometimes personal and it means something totally different to you, right? Than it means to me. So
our lens that we're seeing through. Yeah,
exactly. Because for me, it was like, average is like, well, how we're all trying to be the same, and it's about authenticity, standing out. So yeah, I love that. Awesome. So thank you again, Kelly. like I said, I will share everything in the show notes. I really appreciate your time and your wisdom. Thank you for sharing your genius with the world. I think it's so needed. And thank you, listeners, for being here as always. And I'm very excited to be with you all on the next episode. Thank you for listening to this episode. And if you enjoyed what you heard today, then please subscribe, rate, and leave a review on iTunes. And if you also know someone that you know in your heart could benefit from listening to this podcast, then I invite you to please share and help me reach more conscious leaders so we together can create global impact. I truly appreciate you, and see you next time.